Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Thank you. All right. Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Everybody everywhere for your kind words, for your adulation for the show and the guest on the show and the topics on the show. I get a lot of it, and thank you so much. You're welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We are broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. I'm on the north side of the city near the lake in my studio, and it's fun. It is the first day of fall. You could have fooled me. It feels like the first day of summer. It's the first day of fall and summer's gone. And that's a sad thing, but it still feels that way. I'm hearing in the coming days, it's going to get a lot cooler. And hopefully not too cool, because we have grown used to this weather. And I hope wherever you are in the world, that it's great and wonderful weather-wise where you are. All right, let's get right along. Welcome to the show. It is Thursday, September 22nd, and the month is going pretty fast. Everybody's talking about the debates that's going to happen next week between Hillary and Donald Trump. That should be interesting. But a bit of news here, folks. The Tulsa officer, I believe her name is Betty Shelby, if I'm not wrong. We're going to have to check that out. She's been charged with first-degree manslaughter, and she should be. And it was long coming. First-degree manslaughter. And I have here on my board, are blacks being hunted by the police? Some blacks feel that way. They feel as if they are being hunted by the police. Even I myself, if I'm saying that correctly, there have been so many police shootings of black, unarmed black men, unarmed black youth. And I still took the side of the police officers. I took their side. I said, wow, you know, I took the side of the police officers because that doesn't make sense for African-Americans to put themselves in a situation where they can be shot or killed. And I took the side of the police officers because they're out here putting their lives on the line. But even though I looked over some of the shootings that were probably pure murder by some of these officers. Pure murder. Cold-blooded murder. Tulsa officer is charged in shooting, in the shooting death of an unarmed black man. He had his hands up. I'm pretty sure you've probably seen the video. It's all over the place. I think first he was tased and then he was shot for no good reason. Of course, the police are always going to try and lie. Well, he was reaching for a gun, or he was reaching inside his car, or he wouldn't stop when I told him to stop. The man had his hands up. And my understanding is that he was just stalled in the middle of the road. And he was obviously he was trying to get help to restart his car. And the police showed up and, you know, and the guy in the helicopter, wow, he's a bad guy. Oh, he looks like a bad one. They don't consider that the guy is a father of four. He's a icon in his community. They don't care about any of that. The first thing some of these police officers see is black. That's it. Black. Manslaughter charge against Betty Shelby was filed 6 days after the multiple cameras showed the white officer shooting 40-year-old Terrence Kulcher, who is black, as he stood beside his stalled sports utility vehicle. Moments earlier, cameras had captured Kulcher walking away from Shelby with his hands in the air. I mean, the guy, if you saw the video, he must have had his hands in the air for maybe a minute to 5 minutes. And first thing, he was tased, he fell on the ground, and next thing you know, he was shot. And after that, he was dead. And there are so many people out here thinking that black people are targeted. And you know what? I'm waiting for Obama to say something. He hasn't said anything about both of these incidences. Charlotte, North Carolina. I mean, where these riots are taking place. Obama hasn't come out and said anything. This is another cop shooting, but this time it's a black shooting a black. Police officer was African American, and the person he shot was African American. And they're trying to say he had a gun or a book or whatever, but there was a gun found at the scene. Who knows? That gun could have been planted. You know, I mean, because things happen like that. If it was a gun, if that shot, that video shot did show a gun, it may have been planted. Who knows? Because police officers, riot gear officers, I mean, when they walk out into the street, a lot of these cops are armed with drugs. They're armed with guns, you know, and they get away with murder, some of them. Like I said before, I was on the side of police officers, but I just cannot take their side anymore. I wanted to say most officers who are on the force are dedicated, good officers. But, you know, this keeps happening and happening and happening. And you wonder if blacks are not being hunted down like dogs by the police. And then you have Trump. Donald Trump, the presidential candidate, saying that he wants to initiate stop and frisk in the city of Chicago alone, because we've had, so far, I think we had over 3,000 shootings. 500, just about, if I got these statistics correctly, 600 dead since the beginning of the year. And he wants to, and he's trying to get black votes. He's trying to get African-American votes, and he wants to initiate stop and frisk, which is nothing but profiling. If you ask me, it's profiling. He's not going to get black people's votes by having the police harass them even more. Are you kidding? The guy doesn't think. He doesn't try to think.
In the Impact segment tonight, out of control violence in Chicago. The crisis gaining new attention after the senseless murder of Nikia Aldridge, the cousin of NBA star Dwayne Wade, over the weekend.
Her life was cut short by gunfire from two convicted felons who were both out on parole, one of whom was on his daily break from an electronic monitoring bracelet. This reprehensible act of violence is the example of why we need to change the way we treat habitual offenders in the city of Chicago. When will enough be enough?
So far this year, murders in Chicago are up an astounding 49% compared to the same period in 2015, intensifying criticism of the Democratic policies that have long governed that city. Joining us now with reaction from Chicago, Hermine Hartman, publisher of Indigo Magazine, and from Washington, Crystal Wright, author of the book, Con Job.
Controversy and outrage surround the latest deadly police shooting of an unarmed black man. This time, it happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the incident was caught on camera. The shooting took place on Friday night. Police were responding to a call of an abandoned vehicle in the middle of the road. When officers arrived at the scene, they found the car's driver, 40-year-old Terrence Crutcher. What happens next is caught on video by the officer's dash cam. We want to warn you of the graphic content. Here it is.
That looks like a bad dude, too. To be honest, something.
I think he may have just been pagered.
Shots fired! Terrence died of his wounds, and Tulsa police later discovered that Terrence was not armed. His twin sister, Tiffany, is heartbroken and angry.
What do you mean? He had his hands up.
What needs to happen in this case?
I'm demanding that the charges be pressed immediately. The footage is there. The video speaks for itself. There was no just cause. The city judge was a big bad dude, and my brother was a father, was a son.
What do you think it'll take to stop racial profiling?
Well, I mean, I wish any of us could answer that question, right? This is like a new low to me. It's so disheartening that he didn't have a weapon, he didn't have any drugs, he didn't have any behavior that was alarming, his arms were up. I don't understand. There was like practically 6-7 police officers there or something. Why this officer could have interpreted this as a threat is so beyond me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we... Too often there is paid leave. I don't know if it needs to be, you know, prosecuting when someone uses such poor judgment like this. I mean, that's the only thing I can do.
I think there are two things to think about, which is, first of all, as you said, he was complying. He was tasered. You can't tell from these videos, but what it seems like, and this is allegedly, is that he was actually shot when he was already on the ground, which is really
alarming.
We also remember a recent case, and I don't have the name, I think it was in Florida, of a guy who was a therapist working with a guy with autism.
Yes.
He's on the ground, on his back with his arms raised, and they shoot him anyway. And when he asked the cop, why did you shoot me, the cop said, I don't know.
Right.
So what we have is, look, this is hard to talk about. This is hard stuff to talk about. But we have a legacy of racism in this country. And if we don't start calling it racism, then we can't fight it. We have to see what it is. Have to be trained differently. If this had been, you don't have to train the police not to shoot white people. Why you got to train them not to shoot us?
But that damn thing, everything has to be confronted. Everything has to be confronted. Because when you see a
I was a high-speed chase recently in L.A. with a Caucasian woman. She went through several counties. She ran into cars. She ran up on the road. When they took her out of the car, they gently removed what looked like a cell phone and gently handcuffed her. If that had been a black man, he would have been face down on the pavement without 1 second of conversation. We have to change how we see each other. And we cannot do that until we say what it is, which is that racism and fear of black drives these shootings. We have to change as a nation. Fundamentally, what I know we got to break, the first thing you got to do, you got to make it a hate crime. You got to put people in jail. When you shoot somebody under the color of authority, you need to lose your job, and you need to lose your life, and you need to lose your freedom, like every other American loses their freedom. That's right. We need to be careful, but remember, there are good police officers out there. And the ones that are not, they need to go to jail. They need to go to jail. And don't tell me this, we got to train. Your wife, y'all drive all the time and don't nothing happen to y'all. And we black. And I'm afraid to drive my damn car because if they don't know who I am, I can be shot. I feel y'all feel bad. This ain't never going to stop.
Yeah, that was powerful. That was powerful. And I understand her passion, because the police officers, some of these guys and girls are out of control. You know, they are out of control. And I'm going to say this again. I don't know why Obama hasn't said something about these two recent and latest incidences. I have a feeling that I know why, because in the past, police shootings, unjustified murders of black men, the first thing Obama has done is jump on the side of the police officers, more so than he would want to have been on the side of the victim, the person who was shot and killed. You know, he jumps on the side of the police officers. These latest incidences where the police officer seems at fault, allegedly at fault, because this woman, this white officer in Tulsa, Oklahoma, police officer captured on video shooting an unarmed man. She has been charged with first degree manslaughter charges. This has to hurt Obama, because he's strictly for the police. And he's made that plain. But now, since this is a straight up cold-blooded killing, he's quiet by his loving police officers on the force. So he's going to be quiet. He's not going to say anything, you know, because he wants the police to be justified in what they're doing. But when they're not justified in what they're doing, and it's proof that they're not justified in shooting unarmed black people in their backs, he will not say a mumbling word. I'm pretty sure he's going to come out at some point and say something, but he's being peppered. He's going to spin it. He's going to twist it in a way where it's, you know, going to favor the police officers. I've said this several times, even I, on this show, many times I've said, I support the police officers. I support them. But the more and more I see of these unjustified shootings of African Americans, it just, you know, turns my stomach. I want to say there's good police officers out here. I want to say there's dedicated police officers out here. I want to say there's police officers out here who's going to, who got my back, so to speak. But as a black man, I know they don't have my back. You know, the police officers, I mean, they the first thing they do is pull out that gun. You know, it feels good in their hands. Their finger is on the trigger. And suddenly a innocent black man comes into view and he's dead. You know, and majority of the time these officers get away. I mean, if it wasn't for videotape, cameras and surveillance cameras all around everywhere, and body cameras and dash cams, these cops will get away with this. They will get away with it, and their co-workers, their fellow cops would back them up, especially on reports, on incident reports that they have to write. So, you know, I'm sitting here in my studio, and I'm saying, when will the next shooting happen? When will the next victim how long would it take, a week or a month from now for the next police shooting, unarmed shooting of an unarmed man? You know, unarmed African-American. I've always said when there's a police shooting, an unjust police shooting, whether the victim is white or black, it is still wrong. But majority of the time, it's an African-American who gets the bullet. But it's great that this woman, this police officer, this white woman has been charged with manslaughter because the public pushed this. And the police force in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they knew they had to do something, because even after this shooting, there was apparently no rioting in Tulsa, Oklahoma, like there was in Charlotte, North Carolina. There was no rioting. Everything was quiet there. And I'm thinking it's going to remain quiet because now this woman is going to jail, where she belongs. And a lot of these police officers out here who are fast on the trigger should be going to jail. Lock them up. And I've said this several times on the show. If there's a good police officer on the force and this officer knows or comes in contact with a bad police officer, and that police officer will not turn that bad police officer in, then a good police officer is also a bad police officer, because this police officer is letting the bad police officer get away with so much that is not right. That is not right. So you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Broadcasting live out of Chicago. It's the first day of fall, folks, and it feels like summer in the city of Chicago, and I really do hope that it's nice where you are. And thanks for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show, a popular internet radio show, and I'm proud of that. I have worked hard for that. Let's try and go actually to the phones. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, you on the George? Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Victor Chino.
Okay, Victor Joseph. Yeah, Victor Joseph Chino, am I correct?
Chino.
Chino, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's like cappuccino, it's like Al Pacino.
Okay, Chino, Victor Joseph Chino. Okay, all right.
Nice to meet you.
Are you breaking up? Your phone is breaking up.
All right. Is this better?
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us what you do and give us a little bit of your bio. And thanks for joining me on the show today.
Okay, you're welcome. Well, I do a number of things. I have a small oil business in New Jersey, and I do real estate work here in New York City. And, of course, I write. So those are
the things
that keep me very, very occupied. Can you hear me okay now?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, good. And I've written this novel, Little Gangster, and I wrote it as a coming-of-age novel of a young boy about 12 years old growing up on the Lower East Side, and not much different from the ghettos that we have in the entire country of our United States. So one of the things that really prompted me to write this is to do something about the ghettos, to help young black kids, to help them out and get out of that situation, that morass of a situation, which keeps them from leading a good life.
That sounds great.
My novel. Yes.
So this is a nonfiction novel.
This is what is called fiction nonfiction novel.
Nonfiction. Right.
It's a new form. It's very much like In Cold Blood by Truman Capote, except that was nonfiction mostly.
Yeah.
This one is an offshoot of that type of novel, which basically dramatizes events of my past.
That's how it's done. Okay. So is this your first book?
Yeah, it's my first novel. I've done a screenplay with George Davis. I don't know if you know George Davis Jr. He was the author of Coming Home, a novel he wrote back in 1979. George and I went to
And they made a movie together. Of it.
That's right. And Jane Fonda and John Voight.
Tom Cruise.
We're all in it. And Bruce Dern. Bruce Dern. I don't think Tom Cruise was in it. He might have been too young in 79. But it was Jane Fonda, Bruce Dern. That movie won an Oscar, Coming Home.
Okay, I'm thinking about that Oliver Stone movie he was in. I'm sorry, I was getting them confused.
Oh yeah, the 4th of July movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the movie that Tom Cruise came back from Vietnam, paralyzed, and in the vet's hospital, loaded with rats and mice and all kinds of terrible things. But so that was the sad side of the Vietnam War, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this novel pertains to the novel starts off with a challenge. The boy, in this case, is Joey, and he is offered a scholarship to prep school to come out of the Lower East Side, which is kind of a, you know, poor working class neighborhood. And he's caught in that challenge. He has to decide whether he's going to leave the neighborhood, all his friends, his family, his parents, and his girlfriend, to go off to college, to prep school, to start a new life. And at this point, he's only 12 years old in life. Very tough decision at that age.
Yes.
And basically, he faces a lot of challenges. And one of them, of course, he's working for mobsters, and he has to walk away from a lot of money at age 12, which he uses to gamble on stickball games, and leave his life and go off to a new challenge, New England's prep school, you know, a higher-end New England prep school. And that's what this novel is about, growing up as a young boy. And there aren't that many novels like this. There are a lot of young ladies' novels, because there are a lot more women novelists than men at this stage in life. And in our...
Do you believe that?
I'm telling you, I look at the bestseller list of New York Times. Most of them are women. And there aren't that many young men novels about boys growing up. Now, I got a call from the boys from the Brooklyn Public Library. And they asked me for 60 copies of the novel because they thought that the novel had many lessons to teach to young boys. And I particularly care about minority group kids because I was a minority group kid. And I got a chance to get out of that neighborhood and make something of myself. I don't know how much I made of myself, but at least I was able to work hard, struggle, meet challenges, and get a college degree, get a master's degree in English literature. I taught school for 5 years. I started my own oil company, and then I started an environmental company. And I always wanted to write, so George Davis called me up. George is black, and we remained good friends for all these years. And George said, look, you know, you're doing very well in business, but you're a writer. Why don't you write? So that's how we came to write the movie, the screenplay called Fatima. George and I collaborated on that, and we're hoping to sell it to a studio.
Okay, that's great. That sounds wonderful. And your book, does it incorporate a lot of your own experiences? I'm thinking it does.
It does, absolutely. It deals with very many that struggle with the gangsters who are paying him. There's also a theme of acceptance and tolerance. One of Joey's cousins is gay. And in those days, they called him queer. And Joey's girlfriend, Maria, already acknowledges and tolerates his cousin, but Joey does not. Until there's a confrontation where Sonny is brutalized, somewhat almost brutalized, but with the intervention of him and his friend, they save Sonny. And they come to realize that Sonny, you know, is a human being, and he's born that way, and that's it. You got to accept things like that, you know? And it's the same with minority groups. Everybody's got to accept each other. Yeah. How do we do that?
You're right.
I mean, how do we do that? There's so much prejudice in the world, and I tried to, meet that challenge of the prejudices that go on in our lives. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And believe you me, it's going to take a long time. But we got to start somebody. We got to somewhere. We have to rebuild our ghettos. We have to accept the challenge of rebuilding the ghettos. Get our asses in there and work to get these kids into a new life. So they avoid drugs, avoid crime, avoid all the bad things that happen to young, poor kids. We got to do that. And this country, this government has to deal with that. And nobody, neither the Republicans or the Democrats, are facing that challenge. And to me, that's the biggest challenge of all. We don't have to worry about outside forces. We got to worry about our own right now. And our own means taking care of minority groups who are getting hurt real bad. That's why we have one million, 2 million kids in prison right now. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, I was going to say that because some of these war-torn and slums and ghettos, the kids are heading straight to jail. I mean, that's the only future they have to look forward to. But I do,
there's no money for them to make. There's no jobs, no education, no training, and they're being neglected by our society. It's terrible. And we have a country that is the richest country in the world, and we're not taking care of our own kids. And look at all these kids. Look at George Davis. He went to college, got his master's degree, wrote a great novel, wrote a great screenplay, black kid. And look how many of those kids that George Davis is that are in those ghettos who are turning to drugs and crime. It's a national disgrace. That's the way I feel about it.
It is a national.
Your mayor would go right into those Chicago precincts and deal with that situation directly instead of letting those kids murder each other. It's a disgrace. Yeah. A disgrace. I mean, he worked for, he was the chief of staff for Obama. He should be out there in the streets talking to these kids.
And you know what? I think Obama should be out here. I think Obama should be out here also. We've been trying to get Obama to come here. We've been trying to get Obama to go to some of these high crime areas and talk to some of these kids who are shooting each other. We've been trying that for years. Obama will not come. And as far as I know, Rahm Emanuel he's giving a speech tonight on how to solve the crime in the city of Chicago. He's hiring 1,000 police officers, but I've said on this show yesterday, it doesn't matter if he hired 2,000 police officers. If you don't have a plan for bringing down crime, it's just a waste of taxpayer money. He doesn't have a plan. They don't have a solution to doing this. And when they do have plans and solutions, they don't work. So so he's supposed to be. Yeah, go right ahead.
How many boys clubs are there and girls clubs are there in the ghettos? You got to start somewhere. And when I grew up, we had a boys club that took in all these kids after school. And now the boys clubs of New York, here in New York City, they have study halls from 3 to 6. And they bring these kids in voluntarily. Teachers come in and teach these kids. It helps them to better learn what they have to learn. And plus, it keeps them off the streets. And it teaches them how to lead good lives. You need more social clubs. You need more clubs that are going to pay attention to the youth in the ghettos. And then further, you got to get jobs out there. You know, during the war in the 30s, Roosevelt had jobs for people, paid for by the government.
Yeah, you got to You got to give him something to do. You got to give him a. You got to give him hope. You got to give him a leg up or something. Because they're sitting around idle and doing anything and doing nothing, and you know they're going to get in trouble that way.
No, you got to. You can't have kids hanging around at 7, 8 o'clock at night, hanging around lampposts, smoking, selling drugs, drinking, all of that. You got to get those kids off the streets. And you got to teach them the importance of leading a good life. That's one of the reasons why
I agree.
Joe was not a little gangster. Because he was a little gangster, Joey. Meaning me. But
I figured it was you. The 12-year-old was you.
Well, it's partial autobiographical, partial.
Yeah, well, you know, partial.
But you know
some
what?
Go ahead.
You got to. Point I'm making is hopefully some of these kids in the ghettos read this book and they get to understand that I was like an hour away from going to jail, going to reform school, and my whole life would have been over. Why? Because I listened to my gangster friends to go and burglarize a department store, and I'm the only one who got caught. And I go in the front of the courtroom, and the judge says, man, you're going to reform school. And then the boys club director got up and said, look, you can't do this young kid. He's 12 years old. I'm going to send him a scholarship. He's got a choice. You have a choice, Your Honor. You send him to reform school or you send him to prep school. Which one is it going to be? And that director shamed the judge. And he said, you know what? I went to prep school, the judge said. I'm going to send this kid to prep school. And you know what? If he didn't say that, I would have been in reform school and my life would have been over. And I was a 12-year-old kid. How many kids in the ghettos are listening to the older kids shooting people, not going to school, playing hooky, not working, selling drugs? Society has to take care of these problems. And they can do them if they all sit down and do the right thing, create the elements in a society for those ghettos. That's what they got to do.
Yeah, I appreciate your. Yeah, I was going to say, I appreciate your passion. And you are exactly right on the money. However, you know, there are some mentors and some teachers who are in African-American neighborhoods right now, taking the kids off the street, giving them something to do. And but it's not enough. I don't think it's enough, you know, and the police act as if they don't.
What do you think? What do you think is the next
taking them for taking them off the street?
Yeah.
The next step was probably giving them something that they can giving them something to do, like a job or you know,
yeah,
giving them something that they can giving them something to feel positive about going forward in their lives instead of picking up a gun or standing out on the street corners or sitting, you know, just walking the streets, you know, looking for something illegal to do.
We got to have people in the ghettos who are going to pay attention to these kids and give them something to do that's productive, all right? And give them a job, give them decent housing, and not be the victims to slumlords. And it's not only housing. That doesn't work. We tried that in New York City. What do we got? We got projects that are full of minority groups, and those kids are not going anywhere. We can't have projects. We need to have a mixed community where we got a mixed group of people, blue collar, working class, poor kids, middle class, upper class. And then at the same time, create the economic conditions for these kids to pull out of the ghetto. And then we got to face these drug lords. We got to face crime. And we got to tackle those guys. There's a ton of things that we can do. But somebody's got to take the bull by the horns and tackle it. That's it.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, you have a lot of solutions and a lot of plans on doing things for these poor communities. I just wish our officials, our politicians could come up with something, you know, like that. They can't seem to come up with anything like that. Sometimes I think that they like for people, I think they like to keep their foot on the backs of some of these poor people's necks. They want to keep them down. It has to be because they're not trying anything.
You know what it is? I think a lot of things. One of them, they're politicians.
Okay.
But they're watching their back. The second thing is the problem is so overwhelming. It's taking generations just to get where we are today. And you know, it's a problem that's so overwhelming that politicians say, oh, my God, I'm never going to solve this problem. Because it's rooted in a white culture which utilized black countries in Africa, took their people and made them slaves. So we got a problem that's inherent in the white community. And that's a problem. That's a serious problem. How do you overcome that? You overcome that by interracial relations, by interracial activities, and by integration, and by a guy like Obama to get off his dead ass before he leaves office and do something about his fellow black men.
Exactly. I voted for him twice too. So I voted for him twice too. So I have a right to criticize him when I think it is needed. We need him now. We have been trying. We need him now. We have been trying to get this man. Go ahead.
I agree with you. He should have been down there. All of the look, if he had started 8 years ago, I'm sorry, but I got to say this. If Obama, after the first month in office, had gone down to the Chicago, you know, wards where most of the crime is taking place, hundreds of kids are being murdered every year. If he had gone there 8 years ago and helped set up community programs, and you know what? While he was president, became a community leader at the same time. We wouldn't have all this crime right now.
I totally agree.
Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I understand your passion. I totally agree. I think they would have listened to Obama. He's the president. He's African-American. They would have listened to him. They would have looked up to him. He would have been one of their greatest mentors, but he refused to do it for some reason. He refused to do it. I mean, not only me, myself. Why do I think he refused? I think that he just doesn't want to be around poor people. I think he'd rather be around rich people than to be around poor people. And I think he supports the police department at what they're doing. You know, even if it's wrong, you know, he's a big supporter of the police department. And I just think he doesn't want to be around black people. I just people of his own color, of his own nationality. I think that it's that's what I think. I just think he doesn't want to be around poor people. I think he would just want to be around people who are like himself, or rich, maybe. I don't know. But it's sad.
Well, you know, that I won't mention names, but an accountant of mine years ago, Sicilian guy, he got his degree, he became an accountant, and then all of a sudden he became a Republican. So I understand where maybe Obama's coming from, but his roots are liberal roots. And I know he's got major problems overseas, all right, with ISIS, major problems with Russia. An economic, the economy. He's created more jobs.
Russia and ISIS did not vote for him. A lot of those people in those poor neighborhoods gotten up out of their hospital beds, rolled down to the poll booths in their wheelchairs and voted for this guy. And in their time of need, he's not there to help them out.
Right.
African Americans put him in office. It wasn't ISIS. It wasn't some great leader from overseas or anywhere. Right. The people of Chicago put him in office, you know, and he's right now at the White House giving out medals and stuff like that, you know, for the entertainment industry, instead of being out here on the front lines trying to quell the violence that is happening in his supposedly hometown. Chicago is supposedly his hometown. You know, he says once he leaves office, he's coming back here. You know, he was sent to the White House from Chicago. Why wouldn't he want to, you know, do something about the violence? Go ahead.
I'm going to give you an example. Jimmy Carter. Now, that president, when he left office, he worked for poor people. He built houses. He
exactly.
took right to the roots of sources, and he did what he could. And I consider that man a great man, a brilliant guy, but humble, very humble. And I think maybe you're right that Obama, you know, the office of president to his head, but now he's got to get back into it. It's never too late. It's not too late to change. He could do it. And if he's listening to your interview, George, send the whole damn thing to him. Because I'm a white guy, and I voted for him twice, and I agree with you. He's got to do more for his people. That's the bottom line. If I were president, and I'm Italian, and I confronted the same problems for Italians, you bet your life I'd be taking care of your people. And that's the way he's got to do it. But my knowledge,
I don't think it's
going back to that.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Well,
I don't think it's going to happen. But go back to your book. Go back to your book because we want to talk about your book. Author Victor Joseph on the George Waddle Jr. Show. Go right ahead. Where can we find your book?
You can go on Amazon. It's you could buy it on Kindle for $3.95. Little Gangster. It's called Little Gangster on Amazon.com. And and you could buy hardcover for $29.95. But I was going to say that many of the lessons, like fear, how do you confront fear? How do you confront a bully? How do you confront intimidation by your friends? For example, there's a chapter in there about intimidation, about how his friends in his gang persuade him to go burglarize a warehouse. And that he's the only one who gets caught, as I mentioned. He goes before a judge and almost ruins his life. Why? Because he could not stand up to his friends, you know, try to push him into doing something wrong. And I can see a lot of black kids who got caught into that situation. Fear. How to get bullied. How do you block a bully from continually beating up on you? You know how you block it? You fight him. You get up and you fight him and you get up and you fight him till you give him one in the nose and you break his nose. That's how you confront the bully. It's like Hitler.
Yeah, well.
In 1939, nobody confronted him. Look what happened. 190
Victor, people. Victor, do you have a website so we can go to?
Well, it's just Victor. Well, you know, I can't even remember the name of the website. But
okay.
I think
that's
if
no
you
problem.
Go to Amazon.com, there's 10 pages of the first pages of the novel. And there are 7 or 8 interviews of people who have done reviews of the novel. It's gotten 7 or 8 5-star reviews, which is the most you can get from Amazon. So,
you know what it sounds like? It sounds like a great book, and it's a great read, and I would advocate to everybody listening to the show, and once the show is downloaded and podcast, to go pick up this book, because you're saying it's Little Gangster, the title of it, and it's a cross between fiction and nonfiction.
That's right. It's a combination of fiction, nonfiction. And it's really an offshoot of Truman Capote's novel, In Cold Blood.
In Cold Blood. Yeah.
It's an offshoot of that. Yeah. And that novel was written, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But this is what.
All right. I was going to say, are you planning on writing another book once this one's.
I've been asked to write a novel about his years at prep school.
Okay.
So I think I might do that. I might do that because that the time in prep school is how a young boy from a poor neighborhood is now thrown into a whole bunch of fairly wealthy middle class and upper middle class kids. And how does he cope with that new life, that new challenge of dealing in a new culture, New England?
Yeah.
A white community. Yeah. Fairly wealthy kids. So that's the challenge that he faces in prep school. And that's a tough challenge.
All right,
challenge.
Victor Joseph. How do you pronounce your last name again? I don't want to mess it up.
Chino.
All right, Victor Joseph Chino on the George Waters Jr. Show. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
No problem. Bye-bye. All righty. That was Victor Joseph Chino on the George Waters Jr. Show. We will be right back, folks. We're going to do this. And we're going to take it.
Wonder why the phrase is Black Lives Matter. So look, there's 1,000 stories of the police taking people into custody without shooting them. There's a guy who shot up the church in Charleston, killed 9 people in a church. They took him into custody and they got him Burger King afterwards. There's a terrorist in New York and New Jersey. They just caught him. Okay. I don't want the guy in the Charleston shooting to get shot on site. I don't want the terrorist to get shot, even though he's a terrorist and he did the bombings right next to my family and friends. I want us to be America, and I want us to be better than the terrorists, better than the mass shooters. All those guys, okay, hey, we found a way to take them alive. But when it comes to an innocent, unarmed black man in the middle of Tulsa, Oklahoma, we just can't find a way to cuff him, even though he did nothing wrong. Boom, 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 we're going to shoot him and we're going to kill him. So you're going to see the video for yourselves right now. It's Terrence Crutcher. He's 40 years old. And he is a father. He sings at his local church. He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to be proven innocent. He didn't do anything wrong. His car stalled in the middle of the highway. Has your car ever stalled in the middle of the highway? It happened to me once, but I didn't get shot. You probably didn't get shot. But he's a black man in America, so he's going to get a different scenario. So let's look, if you can stomach it, I'm going to show you the videos. He's going to get shot here, and yes, he dies. So I'm giving you that as a warning. Let's look at the first video.
All right, I'm going to hit the recorder. This guy's still walking and following commands.
After taser, I think.
That's got a feeling that's about to happen.
That looks like a bad dude, too. Let me be honest with him.
Which way are they facing?
Police one, they're facing westbound. I think he may have just been tasered.
Shots fired!
Ooh. 321, we have shots fired. We have one suspect down. We need to end here.
I need to get this eastbound closed down if they could, because they're not going to be able to let anybody.
Okay.
That looks like a bad dude. Really? To me, it looks like a guy stuck in the middle of the road with his hands up in the air. But they see a black man in America, and that dude looks dangerous. He's probably on something. Why? He's a 40-year-old guy. He's got kids at home. Why is he dangerous? Why is he dangerous? Okay, you're going to tell me that if that's a blonde woman in the middle of the street with a stalled car, they're going to shoot her when she's got her hands up. You really believe that? There's not a single person in the country that actually believes that. I don't care how hard right wing you are. That's a 19-year-old blonde girl. You know they're not going to shoot her. You know it for a fact. That's an 87-year-old white grandmother. You think they're going to shoot her with her hands up? No. You think there's going to be a guy somewhere going, that looks like a bad dude. What did he say? He said, they need to taser that thing. I mean, that's the least of the problems. Most of the problem is that they shot him. And then they leave him there to die. Here's another camera angle.
This guy's still walking and following commands.
Not for taser, I think.
That's got a feeling that's about to happen.
That looks like a bad dude, too, to be honest with them.
Which way are they facing?
Police one, they're facing westbound. I think he may have just been tasered.
Shots fired!
Ooh. 321, we have shots fired. We have one suspect down. We need to end here.
I need to get this eastbound closed down if they could, because they're not going to be able to let anybody.
Okay.
Don't worry about the goddamn eastbound. The guy's on the floor bleeding out. Go help him. Go help him. Black lives matter because apparently you think they don't. Go help the guy. You just shot him. There's four of you. Go help him. He's dying. Go help him. What kind of cops are you? You're supposed to protect and serve us. Go help the guy. They let him bleed out for 2 minutes, and he died. What, where was the goddamn danger? No. We've been trained. We don't take 0.00001% chance. My job is to get home. No, your job is to protect and to serve us. There's a 50% chance at least that he's going to die there if you don't go stop his bleeding. Nah. I'm going to go and I'm going to close the highways. I'm going to do this. I'm going to back away. I'm going to figure out how I'm going to cover my ass. But the last thing I'm going to do is help that guy who's bleeding on the ground and dying because I shot him when he had his hands up. And they're like, oh, he's about to get tasered. What could Terrence have done not to get killed? If he went towards them, they definitely would have shot him. He goes away from them, they shoot him. He's got his hands up, they shoot him. If he had his hands down, they shoot him. What could he have done not to get shot other than be not black? So now they're caught. In the old days, you know, why is this a big issue now? Because now we have the video. You think this never happened? You think black people have been making it up all across the country for hundreds of years? Oh, no, the black people, they're notorious liars. The cops were giving out candy and unicorns to black people, and they've just been lying about it because they like to lie about cops. No, this is the treatment they've been getting all along. Now we're just seeing it. And so now that we have the video, before they would have been like, oh, he was dangerous, super dangerous. He was reaching. Oh, by the way, was he armed? Of course not. Did he have a gun? Of course not. He's a regular citizen. His car stalled. Okay. By the way, they weren't going to investigate him. They were going to investigate something else. They see a black man in the middle of the road. They don't think I should help him. They think I should kill him. Now, look, I'm going to get to the person who did it, and it's not on purpose. That is very important, and I'll get to that in a second, and some of you might disagree with that, but hold. So now that we see it, the police chief in Tulsa, Chuck Jordan, says, okay, ooh, very disturbing. It's very difficult to watch. Well, that is true. And see, this is why the cops don't like cameras, because then we get to see what they've been doing all along. And then he says, I will just make this promise to you. We will achieve justice in this case. I want to assure our community, I want to assure all of you people across the nation who are going to be looking at this. We will achieve justice, period. Okay, Good. I'll take it. That's a good statement by the police chief. Let's hope we get justice. Okay. Now, the person who did the shooting is Betty Shelby. She's an officer there. Now, I show you her picture because that's all over the news, and that's who did the shooting. Now, I want to tell you, it's not about her. It's not about her. It's the training. It's the training. It's the training. So why do I say it's not about her? Just in 2015, I did another story. A reserve officer shot another unarmed black man named Eric Harris. We did that story. And every time it's the same excuses. Oh, it's a few bad apples, and I don't know. He's a black guy. He was reaching up. He was reaching down. He was moving forward. He was moving backward. Shot him, shot him, shot him. But it's not just Eric Harris. It's not just Terrence in this case. So let me give you stats. So far in 2016, 19 people have been killed by police officers in Oklahoma, giving the state the sixth highest per capita rate of killings by police in the U.S., according to statistics compiled by The Guardian. Last year, Oklahoma ranked number 4 per capita with 37 killings, the Guardian data showed. Why are they always near the top? Do you think it's just Betty Shelby? No, she panicked, and she did because why? Because we all have it in the back of our heads, and apparently they're trained this way. Remember, the black guys, they're on something. They're dangerous, okay? And even remove the racial element of it, everyone is dangerous. Cops, whatever you do, don't take any chances. Mow them down, mow them down. There's a white guy in Miami. Came out, he came out of a barber shop, they claimed he had done a bank robbery, and he had a razor with no razor in it. Are you going to investigate? You're not going to investigate. Shoot, 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 shoot. Oh, he's dead. Oh, it turns out there was no razor. Oops. Laquan McDonald walking away. Who cares? Shoot him in the back. Guy in South Carolina walking away. Who cares? Shoot him in the back. We don't take any chances. We don't take it. It's the training. And there are worse departments. And there are better departments. We told you about a good department in San Antonio where they actually train people not to kill people at the first blink of an eye. In Oklahoma, they don't do proper training. They tell you everything's a danger, and even if the guy's got his hands up, even if there's four of you and only one of him, even if he's not armed, even if he does everything, just don't take any chances. Whatever you do, you are God, and their lives do not matter. Now, finally, I'm going to give you one last video of him sitting there, as his lawyer describes, in a pool of his own blood, while they take their sweet time getting to him. Watch.
On the 305, if we haven't already, start him.
That haunting ticking clock, we did not add that. That is in their video. For God's sake, help him. His life matters. The original cops who did the shooting, get on there. Stop the bleeding. He's not a danger. For God's sake, he's not a danger. You already shot him. You see him. He's not moving. Help him. Help him. Help him. Help him. Help him. He died. He was a father of four on his way home on a Friday night. Now, those four kids don't have a father, and you're telling me black lives matter. Well, Terrence Crutcher's life there did not matter to those cops. It's not because they're particularly evil people. No. It is our training, and we have got to fix it. Otherwise, we're going to have this problem over and over again. Make sure the next time somebody like Terrence Crutcher is pulled over, that he gets home to his family. Young Turks. Together we can change the media, make it more representative of you and not the powerful. Come join us, make a difference. TYTnetwork.com/join.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All righty, we are back. I want to thank my guest, Joseph Chino, Victor Joseph Chino. His name is spelled C-I-N-O, so I'm saying Chino, Chino, or something of that. I'm not good with names. But anyway, he was a great guest, and I appreciate him, and he had a lot more insight. His book is Little Gangster, and it's a book about helping young people, children, to rise above the ghetto, rise above the slums, to rise above and to make something out of themselves. And that's what this show is all about. This show is all about uplifting people. It's all about inspiring education, educating, empowering, and informing. And most of all, making the world a better place. So, and that's what it's all about. And, you know, the shootings, the riots, the police gunning black people down left and right and left, as if black lives do not matter. But anyway, this lady is going to jail, and that's a good thing. She has been, she's no longer a police officer. Her name is Betty Shelby, and she's the one who shot this 40-year-old father of four with hands up, walking away from him with his hands up. I'm assuming he was first tasered and then she shot him. And that's a damn shame. You know, that's a damn shame. And this is one of many, 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 many incidents where police officers have shot and killed a black person. Majority of the time in the back, or shooting them thinking that they have a gun, shooting them saying that they were in fear for their lives, and they truly were not. I'm not indicting all police officers, but there's just too damn many of them out there who are totally should not be on the police force. There's too many bad police officers out there who are giving the good police officers a bad name. And Oklahoma police officers has been charged with manslaughter for the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man after the Tulsa County District Attorney's Office found that she acted unreasonably and became emotionally involved to the point that she overreacted. Overreacted? I mean, if they should have known all of this before they even hired her ass. You know, police officers are not supposed to overreact, because if something like that happens, overreaction, it's deadly. Officer Betty Shelby was charged with manslaughter in the first degree for the shooting of Terrence Culture on Friday night, Tulsa County District Attorney said in a press conference Thursday afternoon, which is today. She was just charged with this manslaughter. Manslaughter meaning that it was an unintended shooting. And more likely, she did it by mistake. You know, but from what I'm seeing, it's cold-blooded murder. They shoot the guy and then they stand there and let him bleed. Instead of stopping the bleeding, trying to save his life, they stand there and let him bleed. Now, that's not serving and protecting. The police do not serve and protect us. They find us and they gun us down. That's what they do. Find, especially African Americans, find them, seek them out, shoot them in the back. Okay, I can't say this for all police officers, but there's too many good police officers who know of bad police officers on the force, and they will not say anything. They will not turn these people in. So that good police officer becomes, in my judgment, in my view, a bad officer. Cutter was 40 years old and was shot and killed as he approached his SUV with his arms raised in the air. The incident was caught on police and helicopter dash cam. It was a video and it's gone viral. And this is just crazy. This is a big, it's a big ass picture of this woman smiling. The guy, the woman who shot shot him, she's smiling. But this is probably just a file photo of her. And she's been charged and hopefully she'll go to jail. I'm thinking maybe she's going to get maybe 5 to 10 years. Hopefully she should get 20 or 30 or maybe life. You know, police officers, they have even, you know what, even after these latest shootings in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the next one in Charlotte, Carolina, North Carolina, there are still going to be more police incidents. This is not the end of this. Some police officer is going to lose it, stopping another black person on the street, on the road, or wherever, and you know, it's going to happen again and again and again and again. You know, and this is not the end of it, because it's been happening for years and years and years, and it hasn't stopped so far. Police killing of unarmed African Americans is going to continue. There's going to be another incident and another incident and another incident. It's sad, but it's true. I believe it's true. You know, they can, I mean, these police forces can give these cops out here on the street all the training that they want, that there is. But once they pull that weapon and put their finger on that trigger, that feels good. The guy is walking away. The guy is running away. The guy is not a threat to him. But that that feel of that weapon and your finger on that trigger, you just have to pull it. Is probably some of the thoughts of some of these police officers. You just have to shoot. In the case of Laquan McDonald, this officer pulled the trigger 16 times. He was still shooting Laquan while he was still on the ground, still shooting him. And as he was shooting Laquan 16 times on the ground, the video also shows every shot that he put into Laquan, there was smoke coming up out of his out of Laquan's body. Shoot, smoke comes up. Shoot. His body was, in other words, his body was smoking every time a bullet went into it. And the case is still being investigated and litigated today. And this guy is going to be going to trial. Jason Van Dyke is going to be going to trial. And he's saying that he's innocent. Wow. So are blacks being hunted? Yes and no. Yes and no. Good police officers are not hunting black people. Bad police officers are. They are, and they will continue to hunt black people, black African Americans, because most of the time, majority of the time, bad police officers are racist. They don't like blacks. They think blacks are dumb and stupid and ignorant and ghetto and should be exterminated like flies. These are the bad police officers. The good police officers, they're going to get out there and serve and protect no matter what color you are. But the bad ones, they will be hunting black people. And that's no doubt about that. They will be hunting black people.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
Well, at the at this hour, I believe Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of the city of Chicago, is now speaking on television or somewhere, on the radio somewhere, and he's talking about plans of ending the violence in the city of Chicago. And I have computers in front of me, but however, I'm not going to bring it up. And I will have highlights of it on the show starting Monday next week. Because we're just about off the air. We got about 10 more minutes left into the show, I believe, 10 or 12, something like that. Anyway, he's giving a speech on violence in the city of Chicago. And I'm hoping that he's coming up with some solutions, because you just don't want to talk. Talking is not an option. Putting some action, going out and doing something, you know, verbalize it. Put some action behind those words. Even hiring 1,000 police officers is not going to do anything if you don't have a plan to bring down the violence, a plan or solutions. We've talked about, people are talking about solutions like in these high crime areas where some of these kids are growing up. And yeah, bad parenting can be a part of it. But the police also had have a stake in this, you know, because the violence is going to continue. It's going to continue. They have to have a viable plan. And I've talked about plans and solutions on this show forever. You know, I've talked about solutions yesterday on the show, the day before, and the day before that, you know, all kinds of solutions that I honestly believe. As a citizen of Chicago and as a radio personality, I honestly believe that the violence in the city of Chicago, and people know about the violence in the city of Chicago all around the world, because every time I have a guest on the show, the first thing some of them say, even though if what we're talking about is totally unrelated to what's going on in the city of Chicago, they will bring it up. Everybody knows about the violence in the city of Chicago. I mean, it's all around the world, and that's embarrassing. Oh, George, you from Chicago. God damn, man. How are you still alive? You ain't got shot yet? People know about the violence in the city of Chicago. It's happening. It's real. It's real. And now this guy is going to be talking about how to bring it down. I'm guessing he's going to be talking about how to bring it down, how to curtail it. I'm guessing he's going to come up with some plans. And a plan is not to hire 1,000 police officers if you don't have a real viable plan of bringing down the crime. And I honestly believe that the violence in Chicago, the level of the violence in Chicago can be brought down. It can be decreased. This doesn't have to go on every day, every night, every weekend, every damn year. The violence in the city of Chicago can be decreased down to nothing. But these guys, these officials, these politicians, either they don't want to do a damn thing or they just don't care. Because most of these, majority of these people in some of these high crime areas in the city of Chicago, they vote. Mayor Emanuel, they vote. Bruce Rauner, they vote. And we are going to remember you guys who did not or is not able to or doesn't want to try to lower the statistics, the murder statistics in the city of Chicago. It's embarrassing. It is totally embarrassing. We've got there is so much being said about Chicago. We've got people leaving the state, leaving the city. We've got young people in other cities, other states who do not want to enroll into our universities here in Chicago. We got people who don't want to come here and live in Chicago. We've got people who don't want to come and live in the state of Illinois because of a whole lot of things. Think people are up and leaving because of politics, crime. And you have people who don't want to come here because of it. And it's embarrassing almost to say, and it's embarrassing to almost say that you're from Chicago. Well, you, George, Chicago, You better get out of there. It's a war zone. Chicago is a beautiful city. It's a beautiful town. And I don't think the killings and the murders and all of this stuff that's going on, and it is going on, is going to diminish what a great town Chicago is. And I always espouse that on the show. No matter what you hear about Chicago in terms of the murders, the killings, the crime statistics, you know, if you can look past that, we have a great, great sports team in the name of the Chicago Cubs. Hopefully they're going to go to the World Series. They're working on their 100th win as I'm speaking today. So there's other great things going on in Chicago that has nothing to do with the crime, but the crime in Chicago is overshadowing everything else. There's no doubt about it. It is overshadowing everything else because, like I said before, people are not enrolling into our universities from other states. They're not coming to Chicago. They're not coming to Illinois. They're going to, if they want to go to school, they're going to go somewhere else, but not Chicago. And this should concern, our politicians, but it doesn't seem as if they give a damn or they care. This should concern them. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and this show is always all about making the world a better place. And, every time I say that, making the world a better place, I hear it on the television shows. I hear it on over-the-air radio. And that tells me that these people are listening to me. I don't mind people trying to copy this show. You know, I mean, if you hear something on this show and you want to use it on your show, it's fine. You don't even have to give me credit for it. I mean, because I feel if there's competition, I'm not in competition with anyone. You know, I'm just on the show trying to do the best I can with helping to make the world a better place. And that's all it's about. It's not about anything else but trying to help to make the world a better place. That's it.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw. Heaven help us all.
All right, we're just about off the air. We will not be back on Block Talk Radio until Monday. Monday, we're going to take off a few days to do some writing, editing, and relax. And, of course, we're going to have to be booking shows. We're going to book a lot of shows. We're going to book at least 2 months worth of shows. And I should say book 2 months worth of guests to be on the show. So that's going to be pretty, that's going to be a lot of work. Okay, someone just whispered in my ear, 90 seconds, but that's what's going to be happening for the month of October and the month of November. We're going to be, well, I'm going to be booking guests. I have a whole roster lined up already. I just got to confirm a lot of these people, so. And that's one of the things about the George Wanda Jr. Show. We try to have guests on the show to be informative to my audience, to give something to you as a listener. And that's what this show is all about. And I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank everybody for being a part of it. And your calls, the guest on the show. Like I said, we will not be back on the air until Monday, 3-day hiatus. We're always on the air, this show, Monday through Thursday, from 6 o'clock to 7:30, sometimes 8 o'clock, depends on what is happening. So I will see you guys next week, and we will have a whole host of brand new guests, brand new topics, brand new things to talk about. And I hope to see you guys then. Bye-bye. Shoot it.